This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. You're tuned into the Evening Edition. I'm Caroline Oh. Now, sexual harassment has been a huge topic in the news lately. Harvey Weinstein, Ben Affleck, Kevin Spacey have been, I guess, the recent names involved in all these high-profile allegations of sexual harassment. And in light of these incidents, people across different countries, especially women, have taken to social media to share their stories under the hashtag MeToo campaign. Now, the sheer number of people who have responded to the campaign sadly shows how common sexual harassment is, but it has also opened up debates on when a situation constitutes flirting and when it's actually sexual harassment. An action like a flirty text message or a brush on the shoulder can be fun and welcome to the receiver when it's done by the right person in the right situation. But if it's not, that's a whole different ballgame. So today, we'll be talking about keeping on the right side of the fence and what that means. So to help us with this, we have on the line sex educator June Lau. June, great to have you on the show with us again. Are you surprised that some of us might be confused as to what constitutes sexual harassment and what's just friendly flirting?
I'm not surprised that some people are confused or consider it normal. I think a lot of behaviors, we've become immune to bad behavior. I think that's never a good thing. But the key is to listen to whether someone thinks it's bad behavior. So I think the problem is someone who's on the receiving end of behavior is unable to say that they are uncomfortable with it. Or if they are uncomfortable with it and they've expressed themselves to that effect, the person issuing those statements doesn't take heed and thinks it's okay. And it's a further problem when the people around are making fun and saying that people are overreacting. I think how people choose to take statements is up to them. And if they've expressed dissatisfaction, then they should be respected. That's their wish. So don't issue statements to someone who says they don't want to hear it. And if they don't want to hear it, stop saying it. It's as simple as that. But I think that there's a huge lack of respect for boundaries. But at the same time, there is a lack of boundaries, that people don't know how to set boundaries appropriately or assert themselves when they need to.
Right. So if it's unwanted and it makes the receiver feels uncomfortable, then the giver should just stop, I guess. So when someone meets a person they're interested in, how can they start an interaction and show interest in a respectful way?
This is a very interesting question because I always get asked this question from little kids as young as age 9 and 10 to like older people looking to start dating again at age 45. I think the key is to listen to the other person and have an interest in them beyond a physical one. There's so much temptation to say something about someone's appearance or how much you like something about someone. But I don't know. I think like there's a way to go about it by asking questions. I think our society, actually not just our society, but across the board, people tend to speak in statements. I like this. I am this. I think this. But not enough questions are being asked. And I think that if there's a culture of questioning things, we might be able to get further and be more respectful, actually. Like, what do you think about this? How do you feel about that? And I think that the reason why we don't ask questions is because of our upbringing. We're taught not to question things. And also, we don't have the vocabulary to express ourselves differently. That, I find, is a real problem. I want to talk to you about a recent example. A few weeks ago, someone told me about a Tinder interaction that they had. And as you know, Tinder is full of perverts, and not all of them are perverts, but, you know, there are a lot of perverts. And during this interaction, she was surprised that the person on the other end was able to be so respectful, yet indicate clearly an interest in meeting up or going on dates and perhaps even more. So there are ways. I think we just need to learn to ask questions and to develop our emotional vocabulary. And that takes time. And also to people ask like, oh, you know, how am I ever going to find somebody I like? You know? And the key is to sort of develop more interest areas, I guess, and to ask questions and be interested in something other than the physical. Be interested in things that you wouldn't normally surround yourself with. I think widening your horizons definitely helps.
Well, that's a pretty good tip, being actually interested to find out more about the other person you're speaking with. Now, another thing is that if we're looking at gender norms in our society, it seems that men are still often expected to play a more dominant role. And does this have an impact on harassment behaviour? And do we need a major rehaul in what we think and how we think about gender roles?
Of course, definitely. Definitely, the gender stereotypes are present. In my class, I make it a point to talk about gender stereotypes. I try to fit it in as much as I can. And very recently, I posed a question to my students. And I gave them this example. Tom has been spotted dating two girls this month. Gina has been spotted dating two boys this month. Tom is seen as a bit of a hero, but Gina is seen as a bit of a slut. Why do you think this is? And the responses I got were really, really interesting. A lot of kids had accepted this as the norm. Many pointed out that it was gender stereotyping, but were not able to say why. But perhaps the most interesting answer that I got was one that went something like this. A key that can open many locks is a master key, but a lock that can be opened by many keys is not a very good lock.
Oh dear.
And obviously I had to explain this to the class, and we just started talking about very basic stuff, and it went to things like, am I more than my vagina? Are you more than your penis? I had to ask very basic questions like that. And it was as if some of the students were thinking about this for the first time in their lives. Such basic lessons, you know. So I think it starts with getting them to rethink their ideas of women and women's roles, and to look at exceptions, of course. We have many role models that we can call on. When they say things like women should stay at home and cook, men are not good cooks, or women are not good sports people, you know. You have to point out the exceptions and explain how gender stereotypes limit people. So, yes, definitely it has an impact on harassment behavior. But I think the thing that we need to focus on that we're not focusing on enough is, how do we address this behavior? How do we talk to young people? Because it's hard enough talking to people who have normalized this behavior. But if you can avoid these stereotypes from being in place in the first place, you can make a real change to the way society is. Just think about how certain behaviors were acceptable in the past but are totally unacceptable today. So it's possible.
So, June, can people be feminist and flirt at the same time?
I'm a feminist. I flirt all the time. It's great. Why can't I flirt? Is flirting something that affects my feminist values? I don't think so. What is flirting? Expressing an interest in someone else? Expressing yourself? How does that affect feminism? I think it's a question that presupposes that feminists are tough people and that flirting is necessarily some giggly activity done by soft women. I don't know, but definitely it's possible. I think there's no dictionary definition of flirting. I think the key is, like I said earlier, to be very clear about what you're saying and to be very clear about what you will accept and what you will not accept, to set boundaries. So I'll give you another Tinder example. Recently, I posted an interaction I had with somebody on Tinder on my Instagram. And I'm very open about these things. This person said, "Wow, you're good at expressing yourself. That's very attractive." And I said, "Thanks for the validation, but no thanks." Down with the patriarchy. That's what I replied. And I thought that was very witty. But this person then replied some nonsense about, what did he say? "Oh, are you one of those feminazis? Da-da-da-da." And I just went, "Oh, Tinder nightmare screenshot." And he immediately unmatched me, but too late because I got the screenshot and I had tagged Tinder Nightmares in it, and all my Instagram followers thought it was highly amusing. So yes, possible to be a feminist and flirt at the same time. I think a woke man would have taken that completely differently. It's not worth attracting those who are idiots. So women should remember that.
Well, certainly. And do the rules change after people establish a relationship?
I think that each couple, if they're communicating well, will establish a pattern of behavior that they're comfortable with. Certainly, you'll see people who are comfortable with gender stereotypes, the cliche, relationship cliches and established roles and things that are expected of them. And who are we to fault them? I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't like play into that role of keeping a home or whatever because I'm a woman and I'm expected to do it. I would not feel comfortable doing that. But I don't judge those who choose to do so. It's frankly none of my business. Do rules change? I think they should change. I think that at any time someone is uncomfortable about a situation, they should express themselves. You could be with somebody for 10 years, and if something is uncomfortable, you should feel confident and comfortable expressing yourself. And in fact, if you make it a habit to start doing it at the start of your relationship, you will always have that. You will always be able to talk to each other. So I think the key is communication. The key to establishing the skills to communicate is when the person is young. It's not too late when you're older, but when you're young, certainly. I always talk about establishing emotional vocabulary with young people. From a very young age, we teach them to express what they like, how they feel about a situation. We teach them to talk about things in a positive way, a constructive way. We encourage them to express themselves positively. We encourage them to state what they would like. Then we have a conversation about the pros and cons of choosing certain things. And that, in turn, enables us to teach them how to make informed decisions. And of course, this then extends to every facet of their lives as young people, as teenagers, and then as adults. I'm a big believer in this. And so every time someone tells me that sex education is just reproductive health, I stop them and I say, no, it's not. You need to understand that it's a lot wider than that. And actually, the work we do in teaching communication tricks to kids is far more substantial and takes up much more time than just the sex. There's so much more. I just want to add that when we consider compromise, I recently had an interesting discussion with someone about the idea of compromise. I think there is this very common belief in the dating scene that relationships are all about compromise. And it goes too far, in my opinion. Compromising on what? You know, oh, of course you shouldn't compromise on who you are, but people do tend to do that. I think the line that I would set is when compromising is equivalent to just making excuses for somebody's bad behavior. So you have to be very clear about yourself. And when you see that, you should be ready to call it out in any situation. You should not accept it. And if that person doesn't like you anymore, well, you know what? Not everybody's going to like you. And that's something that I think I've seen a lot of people struggle with. And I hope really that we're able to be stronger, men or women.
Definitely. So June, the recent hashtag MeToo campaign has brought up discussions on how it feels all too normal because of how widespread harassment actually is, especially for women. So is it so common that we're confusing what's right and what's wrong behavior?
I think a friend of mine on Facebook expressed it really well. When everyone was doing hashtag MeToo, many people were unwilling to tell their story because they were afraid that maybe it would be seen as that's not such a big deal. And someone said it's not about severity. And so I think that's very, that's a very strong statement. It's not about severity. If you have experienced any form of harassment, you should speak out because none of it is acceptable. How it feels too normal, how sexual harassment feels normal. I think it's really twisted when sexual harassment is normal. Under no circumstance should it be acceptable. I spoke of my Me Too experience openly because I had been trying to get help. So I will share it here because it's important to share. So a woman like me, working in sexual health, highly educated, getting sexually harassed while working in an NGO. I'm not going to name names because it doesn't help at all. But I will tell you the story. So I was working in an NGO. I was sexually harassed. I filed a formal complaint, a professional complaint in writing, via phone, everything. Nothing was done. Eventually, I had to leave because I was being cold storaged. And I took my complaint to a women's rights NGO, a prominent one in Malaysia. They sent a letter to that NGO that had wronged me. And the letter essentially said, oh, we have a client. Her name is June. She's been sexually harassed or alleges that she has been sexually harassed. Do you want to explain yourself? By the way, if you don't have a code of conduct, you can use ours. It's attached here for your attention. Of course, they never replied. And later, I was told that over the phone, no less, because I kept emailing for an update on my case. I was told over the phone by the head of this NGO, this women's rights NGO, that she would not be pressured by me to go to the press for me. And it was as if going to the press was the answer. So I think that there's definitely like multiple standards applied. When you are supposed to be an empowered woman, there's no way you could be sexually harassed. And there are many, 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 many stories of sexual harassment and abuse happening within NGOs. And all these people who claim to be activists are doing nothing about it. When they're vocal about it, no one really pays attention. It's as if unless you're battered and bleeding on the road and highlighting your cause would cause a media sensation and bring in more funding for that NGO that's representing you, your case is not worth going to the press for. So it felt like that for me. And what later happened with my case was the NGO I worked with, they were investigated by their funders for failing to deliver on their promises. They had received funding and I had left the NGO. So they were not able to carry out the work and they didn't. So when they investigated, they audited the NGO, they found that there was this sexual harassment complaint pending. And then the funders set up an independent investigation panel. And they found the NGO guilty of misconduct and they would have to return all their funding and issue a formal apology to me. Now, the fact that the funder was able to implement these steps to get some form of justice and to clear up matters shows me that the NGO that I went to, the women's rights NGO that I went to, who was probably funded by the same funder, is not doing enough. So I think picking and choosing your cases is extremely unprofessional. And just talking about it makes me angry until today. And it's been many years. So can you imagine like other women who didn't even know that they could go to someone? So yeah, I'm sorry to have gone on about it a bit. But I think that if I have a voice, it's important for me to continue talking about this because many people will not. Many people look at it and go like, what's not such a big deal? Why are you still talking about it after so many years? It doesn't matter. It happened and I don't accept it. I didn't accept it then. I don't accept it now. I don't accept that the perpetrators are running free, no consequence for their actions. And I don't accept that the people who refuse to help me are still being hypocrites in the scene pretending to care about the cause. So I will continue to speak about it for as long as I'm able.
Thank you so much, June, for sharing your personal experience with us and for your thoughts. Really appreciate it. So if you have missed any part of this program or you'd like to spread the word about flirting versus sexual harassment, you can download the podcast. That's available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. You've been listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.